Don't be fooled by measles. For centuries, measles has disguised itself as a harmless childhood disease.
Measles are back. Major outbreaks in the US, Canada and Mexico, warnings to holidaymakers heading to France and Spain this summer, and immunisation rates in Ireland falling. Today we're asking, is vaccine scepticism on the rise again? It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty and I'm delighted to be joined by Luke O'Neill, biochemist, immunologist and of course presenter of Show Me the Science here on News Talk. You're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Thank you, Ciara. Glad to be here.
Luke, for families who are heading abroad this summer, how concerned should they be about this recent rise in measles outbreaks in countries that are so familiar to us?
Yes, sadly they should, Ciara. It seems amazing to think that measles is now spreading again, you know, given that there's a great vaccine. It's on a 25-year high in countries like France and Spain, which is remarkable as a number. And then it's a very dangerous disease. We forget about it, really. You know, before the vaccines were invented, this was a devastating illness. Kids would go deaf, they would go blind, they'd have convulsions, massive high temperature. Of course, we know there's the spots on your body, that's obvious, you know, but it's much more serious than that.
Is it difficult to treat?
It is, but the trouble with this is, many get a mild measles and they get over it, you know, but a certain percent of kids, children, will go into this more severe situation and some will die. Before the vaccinations began, 1 in 500 would die in some countries, you see, and that's a lot of children dying of a preventable disease. And if you don't die, a high rate of deafness and blindness, and I'm young enough to remember you would see deaf kids. That was often caused because of measles. So we know it's a very serious disease. And then even more importantly, the vaccine is a fantastically effective vaccine, 99% protection if you're vaccinated with the MMR vaccine. It needs two doses, but it's wonderfully effective.
So the immunity that has been out there, that was vaccine-induced immunity. So the re-emergence of measles, is that simply down to the fact that not as many young people are getting vaccinated?
That's a big factor. Yeah, there's a lot, as you said, a lot more vaccine scepticism out there. It's a bit of a paradox to me, given that you would have thought we'd love vaccines after the pandemic. But this vaccine scepticism is growing. Parents worry about vaccinating their kids. It's gone back to the way it was about 50 years ago when there was concerns about these kinds of vaccines.
Why?
Well, there's a number of reasons. I mean, clearly it doesn't help that certain people like RFK Jr., for instance, would be questioning vaccines, and that's one reason. The second one, I think, is just human nature. I mean, some parents go, I'm sick hearing about infections and to hell with this, and that would make them reluctant maybe to go to their GP for their kids to be vaccinated. And remember, it is an unusual thing taking a vaccine because you're injecting yourself with a bit of a germ and you don't have the disease. So that's why people have often been anxious about vaccines going back hundreds of years. So it's understandable that there would be a reluctance. And what you need is strong leadership. You need, now the HSE in our country, every health service says vaccinate your child against these diseases, because decades of experience tell us that broadly speaking, this is the correct thing to do. The question I always say to parents is, do you want your child to get measles, end up in hospital with convulsions, with awful problems, maybe dying? That'll be your choice if you choose not to vaccinate your child. And then the parent might go, I'll take a chance on that. That's their right, of course. It's not mandatory by any means. The second thing I tell people is you need to get over 95% of the community to be vaccinated to give what's called, remember, herd immunity, Ciara, during the pandemic.
I'm beginning to shake here.
But you need over 95%. Now, what that means is the virus has nowhere to go. And it's not about your kid, actually. It's other kids who are immunodeficient. There's a risk of them getting infected and dying, you know. But if we all decide to vaccinate our children, you're protecting the vulnerable in that situation and your own child. So there's kind of two reasons to do it. One is for your own child, but the second is to protect more vulnerable children as well.
That sort of fear or worry that parents have, can you understand that? Like, I do remember taking my tiny babies, you know, first time mother into the clinic, and there's a long list of vaccines. You know, you're in and out 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year, 2 years. And I remember, you know, the list of diphtheria, meningitis, tetanus. There was all of these.
Big long list.
And you're thinking, and I do remember, I have to admit, I just remember thinking, oh, fingers crossed, I believe the science. But, you know, I can understand sometimes how people are a bit fearful.
Every parent is anxious about this, there's no question. Little baby, you know, I mean, we all understand that, of course we do. And your immediate reaction would be, I don't want to go near that kind of thing, you know. And all we can do then is reassure them, talk to your GP. if any parents are listening and you are worried, I hope you trust your GP. Go and talk to your GP. They'll reassure you. It's very hard for us, I think, because the statistics, which we have a hard time getting our heads around, tell us these are great things. And if you're an infectious disease doctor, some of my colleagues are infectious disease doctors old enough to remember when these were devastating diseases. Kids would turn up in the surgery dying of diphtheria. You could do nothing for them. The vaccine comes along, that goes away. If you're a doctor, they're the best invention ever because you can actually help people and stop them getting diseases. But it's very hard if you're a young mother with a baby to say, what did you say there again? I don't really like the sound of this, you know. And it is about following guidance. And do you trust the HSE? Do you trust your GP? Do you trust 99% of whatever number is a doctor say, do it? Now, you can decide, I'll go with the 1%. That's your choice, I suppose. But all we can do is reassure people and tell them. They've been so tested. I mean, the MMR one in particular, there was concerns over that, as we know, about autism. Not true. Not true. When that came out, we were all worried maybe there was something in that. Science examines it. There was a massive study in Denmark. 650,000 kids were looked at. No link to autism at all.
That's a huge study. 650,000. Like, that should be really reassuring. Really,
well, that vaccine, if it did cause autism, that was devastating, you know.
Well, I suppose to go back to RFK Jr., I mean, one of his arguments, and he is, of course, the US health secretary now and a vaccine skeptic, he would say that among the medical community, there is a bias towards vaccines, that there's not enough questioning and not enough probing on their efficacy and their safety.
Yeah, that's his position, of course. Now he's entitled to it, but he's the leader. So that's the concern we would have, that he's in charge of this. Now, I do like the fact he set up a new vaccine task force, right, to examine all this. There's no harm in that. Let's see what they say. And then we can counter it. If you're a scientist, you want to be questioned, remember, and you want skepticism. That's part of our job, you know, is to be able to counter criticism of my research, for instance. That's fine. But the trouble is, what he's coming out with, there's no scientific basis for what he's saying a lot of the time.
You have consistently been undermining the measles vaccine. You told the public that the vaccine wanes very quickly. You went on the Dr. Phil show and said that the measles vaccine was never fully tested for safety. You said there's fetal debris in the measles vaccine. And this morning...
All true.
This morning...
Do you want me to lie to the public?
That's not... None of that is...
Of course it's true.
And you've got to look at the data and examine the data and say, look, is there anything in this or not, you know?
Why did he disband the previous panel that was there in the US to advise on vaccines? Is it because he felt that they were not being rigorous enough in their questioning of these vaccines?
Well, it could be he wants to freshen it up. I don't know, you know, but it's partly because he would think some of them have biases. It's okay for him to do that. The new panel, I'm waiting to see what they come up with. Let's watch them. There's no harm in re-examining things, remember, and we'll see what they say. And it'll be the job then of all the medical profession in America to counter what they say with their data. That's what's going to happen here. So, for example, he's also instituted yet another study, is MMR connected to autism? That's a ridiculous thing to do. It's been studied hugely all over the world. Why would you do that? You know, if you're a scientist, you wouldn't. It's like saying, I'm going to prove the earth is round. It's as significant as that in a way. You know? So it's a strange one. I don't know. And we have to live with this. And I guess it does reflect if more and more people are vaccine skeptical, maybe he'll convince them. Maybe this panel will conclude, take the MMR vaccine, given the data, and that would help us. You know, so I'm not necessarily completely against it.
We know the power of social media, and we know how many people now consume information from all over the world from their social media platforms. From what you see, are they consuming a lot of that kind of American, suspicious, sometimes conspiracy-related material?
The problem is we're drawn to the negative. We've evolved, remember, to survive. You might get 10 positive comments and one negative one. You will be drawn to the negative one and you'll obsess about that. That's the way we evolved to survive, right? So if you are a parent and you see one negative comment on a vaccine, there might be 9 positives, your mind will be drawn to the negative, and that's natural, you know? And again, to counter that, take the advice. Take the advice is the way to think of it. There's no doubt that social media has made this much worse because of this fact that it's more there and, you know, there's various people saying various things and you'll be drawn to the negative side. Sadly, again, we're evolved to do that. So that's a bit of an unfortunate thing. That's why we need very strong messaging from the HSE, which they do, of course. The HSE, by the way, let's give them credit. They have a campaign now to encourage parents to start vaccinating their kids more and more. And that's great, you know, and all the medical profession is behind it too. So we need to make sure that we counter that. But even if you do counter it, there's still the problem of people being drawn to the negative is the challenge there.
RFK also speaks widely about what he feels is the sort of negative impact of big pharma.
Yeah.
Congress is controlled in so many ways by the pharmaceutical industry. There's at least one pharmaceutical lobbyist for every congressman, every senator in Capitol Hill, and every member of the Supreme Court. By some estimates, three.
What do you say to that?
Well, we need regulators to watch every company, you know, big pharma, and I would have many collaborations over the years with them. We have to work with them, to be honest, to discover new drugs. That's where new drugs are discovered. So there's no harm in regulating them, like you would any industry. And they haven't behaved admirably in some cases too. But by and large, they're regulated closely. They're very careful overall, you know, and then they are the ones bringing the new medicines and vaccines to market. And remember, the regulator in America is very, very stringent. The FDA, in Europe, the EMA keeps a very close eye on these things. So overall, again, that criticism has to be seen as misplaced. And I presume Big Pharma is responding to him and saying, well, give us evidence, you know, whatever it might be. So that's the way to think of that one.
He does quote, doesn't he, RFK, when it comes to that latest vaccine that he's drawn questions around. He quotes a 2017, doesn't he, Lancet study. So he would say to you, I do have facts. Yeah. I do have a study here that's been published in a medical journal that questions the efficacy and the safety of this vaccine.
Yeah, and you get that sometimes in science, remember. You might have 10% of the publications say one thing and 90% say something else. And that can happen, you know. And then you look at the overall evidence then combined. You can't cite a single paper and say, this is what's going on. You got to, they call this a meta-analysis, because we're well aware of this, you know. You can do a clinical trial in one population and get one result and a different one, a different population. That's the way this is. It's not as straightforward as it seems, you know. And he's, fair enough, he can quote that Lancet piece. That's been countered by experts, of course. They're saying that that study wasn't done as well as it might be. And that's what this is about, science. It's about disputation. And finally coming to a bottom line, really, is what it's about. There still will be some evidence against things, but the consensus view will be X, you see. And the consensus view on these things would be, with vaccines, take them because they're safe, you know, even though there might be one or two studies against that. And that's the way you proceed, really.
We talked at the beginning of this podcast, Luke, about the reemergence of measles. What other diseases are you fearful of reemergence?
Well, if this continues here, if we're going back to the Dark Ages, to diphtheria, the ones you mentioned. In the 1930s, a child in Dublin would be diagnosed with diphtheria and taken almost to the graveyard because that child would die. The vaccine came along, that was the end of that diphtheria. As one example, you know, we're seeing a decrease in vaccination overall. A big one we were about is whooping cough. There's a really effective vaccine for whooping cough. Again, some parents are deciding not to use it. That's a really damaging disease for a baby to have. The cough is one feature, the whooping noise. That child is in huge pain. It's suffering. It might die. The vaccine will prevent that. You know, so again, the worry would be the old diseases that we thought were gone may start to come back. And that means 100 years of medical progress is being reversed here, right? The one we really worry about is polio. That's a disease that crippled children, remember? And it was a fearful disease in the 50s and 60s. If a child ends up with their GP with polio, the GP do nothing except watch that child progressively get paralysed. The vaccine came along. Salk famously was one of the ones who found it. That was the end of polio, you know? So again, we got to keep telling people that we've used vaccines for decades. They're very effective and very safe. Please make the right choice. But if you choose not to, that is your choice, you know, if you choose not to.
The Lancet, a separate Lancet study, Luke, found that we have the second lowest vaccination rate here in Ireland across Europe. Why is it so low, do you think, in Ireland as opposed to those other European countries that you'd think would have a fairly similar culture and mindset and outlook as we have here?
We don't know. That's disappointing to see that. Of course it is. We don't know why that is. Now, again, could it be social media? Could it be various factors here? It's a mystery why that is. The HSE are aware of it and they're trying to correct it, but it's a bit disappointing. There's not a huge difference, actually. There may be tiny differences between each country, and we just happen to come out low down the table. All countries in Europe are having the same thing overall, remember. So I wouldn't read too much into the fact that we're not especially bad, you know, in terms of percentages. But still, we are low down that league table, so we should try to correct that. And that's the HSE wants to do.
And COVID-19 does seem to have worsened this phenomenon, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think that's because it was in the media so much, and then people are naturally going to go, I don't want to hear anything about infections again, and I don't want to hear about vaccines again, and they just turn a blind eye. Again, that's human nature. So somewhat paradoxically, even though it was one of the greatest medical achievements was to stop death from COVID with those vaccines, millions would have died if those vaccines weren't deployed. The vast majority, again, agree with that. There might be one or two people who don't, but the majority would agree what I just said there. So it was a triumph of medical science. And yet, paradoxically, it's increased vaccine skepticism. So it's a bit disappointing is the word I would use. And all we can keep doing is you and me and other people having these kinds of conversations.
One final thing that RFK has done, he has announced that he's going to pull funding for the International Vaccine Agency, Gavi.
Yep.
Why did he do that?
That's heart-sinking stuff now, that is, because here's a great organisation, Gavi. They provide vaccines to the developing world. They have saved at least 20 million lives with their vaccination programme. And now the US has pulled... The US before this were the biggest funder, and fair play to them. They put a huge money into it. Now they've stopped. So that's devastating. Again, it speaks to the vaccine hesitancy issue. Yet again, he's accusing them of not looking at the data. They've countered that and said, we look at the data all the time. We don't want to be harming people. Our job is to save children's lives. So they're very annoyed, you can imagine. And they're countering him and saying, look, for heaven's sake, please help support us. Now, on the more positive side, the Gates Foundation has stepped up to fill in the gap. There's a charitable foundation helping to fund Gavi, which is tremendous, you know. So all we can do is hope that if he's replaced, they reverse that decision and give Gavi the money they need.
It's not all bad news, is it, Luke? I know you always want to draw attention to exciting developments in vaccines, including for diseases like malaria and AIDS.
Well, again, never give up. Here's the first thing, you know. I mean, it is disappointing when we've got very effective vaccines not being used. But
and I can feel it from you here, Luke. You just want to shake people. Please, just believe me.
Them. But again, it's their choice. I keep saying that, but beg them.
Of course it is.
Now, malaria, that's a devastating disease. A million kids a year die of malaria, right? And we've been trying to get a vaccine for a very long time. And finally now there's a vaccine, 75% protection is tremendous. And it was discovered by an Irish doctor, Adrian Hill, working in Oxford. Adrian gets the credit.
Round of applause for Adrian.
I have a collaboration with him on malaria for years. Actually, we worked together. I didn't work on the vaccine aspect. But he led this and this massive efficacy being rolled out in Africa. And it's in the news because Uganda, where there's 56% of people get infected with malaria, many children die. They rolled up their sleeves to beat the band. Every vaccination centre was crammed full of mothers and their babies. One mother had lost her first child to malaria. She tried to immediately give me that vaccine. She made the right choice there, obviously, to protect her second child from dying. So if this continues, and it will, this vaccine now, what's great is it's made by the Serum Institute of India. It'll be made widely available, really cheap, because in the developing world, obviously, cost is a factor here. And malaria experts are saying the vaccine, combined with things like nets, you know, this net business here, when they spray the nets with stuff to kill the mosquitoes, which is very effective because it's coming from mosquitoes. If you combine three or four things, malaria will be on the run and you won't see a million kids dying a year from that disease. And it's a great sort of, like, another great success story for vaccination, really.
Ultimately be wiped out?
That's the hope, yeah. Well, there's various strategies. Another thing they're trying to do is kill off the mosquitoes, by the way. That's been going on for a while as well because they carry it, you know. A third approach is drugs to kill the parasite because the mosquito sticks its beak into you or whatever it is, squirts in the parasite. Could you kill the parasite directly? You know, there's drugs being developed that will kill the parasite. So you can imagine, because it's been a big public health issue for decades, all these different approaches were more optimistic than ever that malaria will be certainly lessened, let's put it that way. And of course, what the vaccine does, Kira, is it doesn't stop you getting infected, it stops your child getting dying and getting severe disease. And that's the prime goal of vaccination anyway. So there's lots of hope around malaria now.
You have your own podcast here, Show Me the Science. Look, what can we listen to this
week? I do. Isn't it great in news talking? We can plug each other's podcast.
Well, I'll be listening to yours this week and making sure you're plugging me. News Talk Daily here, Monday to Friday.
And I've got Tom, my new producer, is the great Tom. this week is all about the menopause. Do you believe in that? It's such a thing as the menopause and the menopause.
Stop stealing our thunder. Give us the menopause, man.
There's equality in all things. You
that's
know,
fair
if,
enough.
If women can have it, why can't men? Now, it's interesting. There's a bit of science behind it, but it may not be true. Sadly, as men get older, testosterone goes down. Now, in women, you get a precipitous decline in estrogen and progesterone during the menopause. With men, it's a bit less. But still, testosterone begins to go down.
And it has impact.
And it makes them feel a bit more tired. Their libido goes down, these sorts of things. The big question is, should they use hormone replacement therapy like women with testosterone? The advice is not, interestingly, unless you have severe decrease in testosterone. There's a particular condition called hypogonadism where you don't make enough testosterone. They're the ones who need the testosterone replacement therapy. But still, science is examining this and we're trying to find find out, is there evidence for it? And if that evidence grows, then you might see recommendations for men in their 50s and 60s maybe to do something about it, so we'll see.
Oh, very interesting. And if you want to hear more on that, the science of the menopause is going to be discussed on Show Me the Science on Luke's podcast this week. Professor Luke O'Neill, it's been a pleasure having you on News Talk Daily. Thank you.
That's great. Thanks, Ciara.
Well, that's it for today's podcast. Do join us again tomorrow. Remember, you'll always find us on the Go Loud app or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like us, do give us a follow or a like, then you'll never miss out. For me, Ciara Doherty, take care.